すれば や,
ればや
おのばくてがすればやプラハシタン
プ
リヤプレマヴィクシャナムプラハシタンプリヤプレマヴィクシャナムHasitam priya prema vikshanam viharanam cha te jnana mangalam viharanam cha te jnana mangalamVihāraṇam ca te jñāna mangalam Prahāṣitam priyā prema vikṣaṇam Vihāraṇam ca te jñāna mangalamRahasi Sangvido Ya Didi Shprisha Rahasi Sangvido Ya Didi Shprisha
Rahasi Sangvido Ya Didi Shprisha
Rahasi Sangvido Ya Didi Shprisha Puhaka
No
Mana Chobhayanti Chobhayanti
Hi
Kuhaka no Kuhaka no Mana Chobhayanti
Kuhaka
no Mana Chobhayanti Rahasi ya affectionate
prema
with love
vikshanam
glances
viharanam
intimate pastimes
cha
and
te
your
dhyana
by meditation
mangalam
Auspicious
Rahasi
in solitary places
Sangvida
conversations
Yaha
which
Hridi
the heart
Sprisha
touching
Kuhaka
Ochita
Na
our
Mana,
minds,
Chobhayanti,
agitate,
he,
indeed,
translation,
your smiles,
your sweet loving
glances,
the intimate
pastimes
and confidential
talks we enjoyed
with you,
all these
are auspicious
to meditate upon,
and they
touch our hearts.
But at the
same time,
O deceiver,
They very much
agitate
our minds.
So
there's no purport.
I'll just speak on this
a little bit and maybe we'll
read on.
We see here
the
gopis
continuing their
songs of
separation.
They're
describing
to
the Lord
how
these four
things,
you know,
the smiles,
the sweet loving
glances, the intimate
pastimes, the
confidential
talks
that they've
exchanged with
Krishna,
are an
impetus
for
pleasure,
because
you know
they're
auspicious
for them to meditate
upon,
and then
they touch
their hearts.
It says here,
what's that word?
Shridishprisha.
The
heart has been
touched.
This sprisha
means to
touch. So
their hearts
have been touched
by
this.
Yet
at the same
time,
they say,
but at the
same time,
O deceiver,
they, you know.
they're criticizing Krishna in one sense, calling him Kupaka, that, oh deceiver, because you've left us, these things are also producing great sorrow. They become, and we see the gopis are actually immersed in an ocean of lamentation because of separation from Krishna. Then Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has some comments on this. And actually, I was just reflecting on this morning, that actually we're so fortunate to have books like this Sarata Darshini, and read about the comments of the Acharyas. Because obviously, you know, someone like Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur or Jiva Goswami, any of these, they're liberated personalities. And the perception they have of these different pastimes, these different discussions of the Lord and his associates are not ordinary perceptions, because they're perceptions which are freed from the contamination of the modes of material nature. Yeah? When one is a pure devotee, one has no influence in the modes of material nature, one has no material desires. And this means then that one is free from false ego. And so false ego means free from this false perception of the self as being the controller and the enjoyer, and they're seeing how Krishna, he is the controller, he is the enjoyer. And they actually see, you know, to some varying extents, obviously no one can see completely the truth of these pastimes because they're so deep. Yet, a personality like Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he has a very deep understanding of the nature of these pastimes. And he describes here, that he's talking about the gopis, that when they see anything that is related to you, it becomes a source of great suffering for us. Even though we want to forget you because you give us sorrows, we cannot, because you have, why? Because you have touched our hearts. Yeah? Because Krishna's actually, you know, by his sweet loving glances, you know, and by his beautiful smile, that talks here about, it says, prahashitam, so this, hashi means to smile, yeah? In Bengali at least, it means to smile. So prahashitam, it means, obviously the pra is accentuating the word, you know? So it's like a very nice smile, yeah? And so a sweet smile. And prema vikshanam, these love-filled glances, Krishna's not just looking at them in an ordinary way, he's looking at them very lovingly, and not just ordinary love, it says here prema. So there's different acharyas describe prema in different ways. Even the gopis, they give a description of prema. I believe it's earlier on in this section in the Bhagavatam, where they say that prema is that love whereby the object of a love becomes purchased. And we see that Krishna, he describes in the 10th canto how by the gopis' sacrifice for him, by their love, that he's become completely purchased. And he says, there is no hope of me repaying this love to you. So you just have to, you know, accept that I can't do anything, that I love you also, and, you know. So with prema, when one has this relationship of prema, the object of that prema becomes purchased, so that they're completely sold out. So in here we see the gopis are describing that, you know, you're glancing upon us and your glance is filled with prema. So also they've become purchased by that. They're controlled by Krishna. And they mention here, they said this Hridi Sprisha, that our hearts have been touched. Yeah? And this, we'll discuss a little bit more about this Hridi Sprisha later. Yet we see that when someone's heart is touched, or someone's heart is affected by someone, then they become sold out to that person. And then he goes on to explain that your intimate exchanges is what's the word for it? Viharanam, I think it is. Yeah, Viharanam, the intimate pastimes. And your joking conversations, Samvida. Because actually we can read, just like we were reading earlier on, how Krishna, when they come to see him in the forest of Vrindavan, he starts to joke with them in so many different ways. You know, what are you doing here? You know, you should stay at home with your families and your husbands and children. He's just teasing them. And Krishna is so expert at teasing. I don't know if I've told this story. There's a really nice devotee in Vrindavan. His name is Dadu. And he wrote this book. It was all about these unusual pastimes of the Lord. You know, I've never heard any of these pastimes before. There's one pastime when Lord Shiva was getting married to Gauri. Yeah? So Lord Shiva invited Lord Vishnu to come to the wedding. Now, of course, Lord Shiva, we know he has many snakes on his body. And these snakes are understood to be different manifestations of the Lord who Lord Shiva worships. Does anyone know who it is that Lord Shiva worships? Sankarshan. He worships Sankarshan, the incarnation of the Lord called Sankarshan. So these serpents or snakes that are on Lord Shiva's body are understood to be incarnations or manifestations of Lord Sankarshan. So he has snakes all over his body. He even has one snake holding up his tiger skin that's wrapped around his waist. So then when Lord Vishnu came, he understood all these things, obviously. So he came on Garuda. So what is Garuda's favourite food? Snakes. So snakes are naturally very frightened of Garuda. So when they saw, when the snakes that Lord Shiva was wearing around his body saw Garuda, saw Vishnu coming on Garuda, they didn't worry about Vishnu, they just saw Garuda, and they all took off, including the one around his waist that's holding up his tiger skin. So his tiger skin dropped. And the Lord did this purposefully. Because he's a joker. He loves his, you see, so many times in his pastimes, he's playing jokes upon people. He loves it. He just loves doing, on his devotees, he plays tricks with them, all the time. There's many stories in the Bhagavatam and different places we can hear. Even like there's that pastime of Mohini Murti. When Lord, after the Lord had manifested Mohini Murti and bewildered all the devas and the demons, then Lord Shiva, he wasn't present at that time. And he'd been there earlier on when they churned the ocean of milk and he drank the poison from the ocean of milk, but he had gone and he didn't see this manifestation of Mohini Murti. So then he came later to see Lord Vishnu and he asked, "My dear Lord, I would like to see this manifestation of Mohini Murti." And it's described how, in the verses, how Lord Vishnu became very grave. Then in the purport, Srila Prabhupada describes that the reason the Lord became grave was because he was thinking, "Oh, this is going to be very tough. How am I going to bewilder Lord Shiva?" But you see, he has this playful nature that even though when he's there in the form of Lord Vishnu, he's thinking, "Oh, yes. How am I going to do this?" He's thinking to himself, because obviously he wants to show the power of his form of Mohini Murti bewildering even great personalities as Lord Shiva. Or we see the other time is like just a little bit later in this chapter, I think it's this chapter or the next chapter, the gopis are running everywhere looking for Krishna. And that's when they discover Radharani's footprints going with Krishna. And anyhow, they come upon Lord Vishnu, and they're asking Lord Vishnu where. Actually, at that time, they had found Radharani had caught up with them. That's right. And they're asking, Lord Vishnu, where is Krishna? And he's pointing with his four arms. He's pointing in all these different directions. And again, he's got this playful mood. So we see here that the gopis are very much affected by that, and it's the same in any relationship. It's like these little like playful sort of, I won't call them pastimes, but playful sort of going on that goes on between a husband and wife or a lover and beloved are very, very endearing. Like the child, for instance, you may have a child and the child comes and, just like we read in the Krishna book, how Lord Krishna sometimes he would bring his father's shoes upon his head. He would struggle to bring the shoes, And sometimes he would bring Mother Yasoda, because you see, even still in India, you see the ladies when they're in the kitchen, because they don't have kitchens like this with the benches and everything like that. The kitchen is just basically one corner of the room, or maybe it's a room on its own. Everything's on the floor. There's like, they have stoves in the ground, like you see in Vrindavan in the villages. They just have a hole in the ground. It's all nicely done out with cow dung, so it's a purified, sanctified place. And they just have one hole with three bumps on. That's where you sit the karai. And there's a hole through the side where you feed things. And everything's like smeared with cow dung, so it's purified. And they sit down on the ground and they cut the vegetables on the ground. And they cook. Everything's done on the ground. There's no kitchen sink. There's no benches. There's nothing like that. They wash their dishes down in the local pukkur. They just take them down and wash in the pukkur. They don't have soap and scourers and things like that. They just use you know, gravel from the side of the pukka, or maybe a coconut husk or something like that. Very simple life. And so when they sit down, they have a sitting plank, you know, a short piece of wood where the ladies, they'll sit on that. They'll squat on the floor and they sit down on that. And so while they're chopping up the vegetables and things like that. So Krishna, he would also playfully bring, you know, this Mother Yasoda's sitting plank, sometimes on his head, or sometimes he'd struggle to drag it and things like that. And when the parents see these things, the play of the children, they become very, very overwhelmed with affection. Well, there's one pastime of Krishna and Balaram that always just enchants my mind every time I hear about it. It's like they would, when they were crawling on the ground, sometimes they crawl up behind the back of the calves and they grab hold of their tail, and the calves would get a fright and they take off, and you know, Krishna and Balaram are bouncing along the ground behind, you know, the calves, and you know, having a great old time laughing and, you know, things like that. So, you know, and the gopis, they would see these things and their hearts would just become melted with affection. So, you know, in Krishna's pastimes we see that, but even in ordinary dealings in this world we see that these playful exchanges in relationships, these are what affect the heart. You know, these types of things. And so they're talking here, they're giving 4 points of, you know, the smiles, the beautiful smiles, the sweet loving glances, you know, the love laden glances of Krishna, intimate pastimes and confidential talks. These things, the gopis become very, very attached, overwhelmed with love for Krishna. And so now when they're experiencing this separation, they're thinking of these things. And then the love is coming up in their heart. But then they're experiencing that, oh, but Krishna's not here. We cannot experience that anymore. And they become sad. They become very, very affected. And the same is that these are, in one sense, these are normal normal responses to this circumstance. But again, they're not normal. They're super normal. In that it's not like an ordinary, mundane, so-called love. Which we see the Acharyas, it's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj. He says that when love has no material contamination, no thought of material sense satisfaction, then it is, you know, it's prem, when it's not contaminated. But when it's directed as to the self, as satisfying the senses, then this is lust. So you see, what we experience here in the material world, it is similar in that, you know, the form of it looks similar. It looks similar in the way that things are going on, yet the actual substance of it is completely different because of what the object, the object of the love, because that object is different. Because in the material world, the object is the self or the extended self, meaning, you know, obviously the self, we understand that, but extended self meaning the family, the relatives, the country, the planet, animals, trees. You know, people have, you know, they have affection for all these different types of things. Yet it's described by the Acharyas because of the object is not appropriate, the inappropriate object, then these things are various manifestations of lust. Yet when we see the relationship of the gopis, then because their object is Krishna and they have no personal desire, they're not trying to get any, you know, they're not after liberation, they're not after economic development, they're not after any of these things. They're just simply interested in satisfying Krishna. They're simply interested in enjoying pastimes with Krishna. And they're completely sold out to Krishna. We see, they've given up everything for the satisfaction of the Lord. So this is actually a manifestation of prema. So they're saying, but thinking of these four things, your smile, glances, exchanges and conversation agitates chobayanti, our minds. He says, mana chobayanti. Mana means the mind. Chobayanti becomes agitated. Because we're thinking of these things. Oh, you cheetah, kuhaka, you cheetah. You've ripped us off, you know. Here we are. We've given ourselves completely to you. And when we have these experiences with you, we see your beautiful smile, you glance upon us lovingly, the intimate exchanges in our conversations, we just become completely sold out to you. Our minds become completely absorbed in you. But now you've cheated us. So they're becoming disturbed. As soon as these enter our mind state, they immediately give pleasure, but then a moment later, they give intense sorrow. Mm-hmm. This is the nature of the relationship they have, you know, because they cannot stand that separation for a minute, for a second, for a moment. It says here a moment, which in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is defined as being an 11th of a second. So even for a moment, they're feeling this, this separation from Krishna, just immersed in intense pain. And then they give the analogy, it's like a poison cookie. And it's like sometimes you get these cookies from the 640, very, very tasty. So you just imagine it's poison. It's got deadly strychnine or arsenic poison in it. So you take, hopefully it never happens, but anyway. So you take this cookie, you take a bite, oh, very tasty, and you die. So they're saying it's like that, you know. It's so sweet, we're thinking of these things, but then in the next moment we're completely immersed in this horrible feeling, this horrible separation of you. And they're saying it's just like that. Yeah. So it's very interesting here, the way that Krishna is interacting with the gopis. That he's smiling very sweetly at them. He's giving loving glances. Yeah? And intimate pastimes, conversation talks, and in this way he's touching their hearts. So this is helping us to understand. Just remember yesterday in the TTC2 course, Ekendra was talking about an instance he had on book distribution, which I thought was in some ways relevant to this. That, tell me if I get the story right. That you're out on the street distributing books, and all day long he was out there and not having any success. Mm-hmm. Everyone was just like brushing him aside, basically. Yeah? And then he was thinking, oh, what's wrong with these people? What's going on here? You know, it must be the modes of material nature affecting them. Then at some point this idea came into your head. Smile. Yeah? So Prabhu started to smile. And then almost instantly, yeah? Almost instantly, he noticed the change in people's response. You know, they started to take books, to engage in sankirtan. So it's a very important principle that, you know, when we're trying to have a relationship with a person, you know, we need to make positive contributions to the relationship. We can't just expect that everything comes, well, here I am, I'm Lord Chaitanya's sankirtan soldier, I'm out here to save the world, whether they want it or not. You know? And like, try to force ourselves upon people, you know, in a very, like, you know, I'm better than you kind of, you know, condescending, you know, they're all hogs, dogs, camels and asses, meat-eating, fornicating, kami, demons, all this, you know. We used to hear this stuff all the time. Fortunately, we don't hear this in Bhagavatam classes so much anymore. You know, but this is like a common presentation, that they're actually very, very, you know, like demoniac, low class, actually best thing is you kill them all, kind of mentality. Yet, this is not the reality. The reality is they are fallen, conditioned souls. Yeah? All the living entities in this world are affected by the modes of material nature. They're under the influence of the modes of material nature. Yet, the main problem they have is they don't realize this. They have no awareness of their actual condition in this world. So, therefore, we have some awareness of this. We have some understanding. Maybe some of us actually realize it. Maybe some of us are completely realized and understand our position. I don't know. I can certainly tell you that I'm not. But I have some small understanding from reading Prabhupada's books of our position in this material world. We're suffering. Manasastanindrani prakriti shtani kashati. Struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. We're, by the prakriti, we're being pushed around, kicked this way and that. And this is the situation for all living entities in this world. Yeah? So, because we have some understanding of this, therefore it is our duty to try to help others to understand this. But we need to do it in a favourable way. We need to do it in a way, as it says here, to disprisha, that touches their hearts. I've seen this happen in Poland, for instance. I was on Indra Maharaj's Polish preaching tour for about 7 years, and it never ceased to amaze me the amount of times that these amazing things would happen. I remember one time we were setting up for a festival. I don't remember the name of the place, but we would go there every year, and it's a very, very popular beach resort. And there's like a river, you know, an inlet, and on the side of the river there's this very large paved section where we used to set up the festival. And it was probably our most popular festival, our most well-attended festival of the whole tour, because like it was just on the inlet. And just around the corner was a beach where there was tens of thousands of people. So what the devotees would do is we'd set up there and go and have Harinam along the beach, and which was just right there. And you know, the people would literally come from the beach in their bathers, etc. like that, and attend the festival. And we'd done it several years in a row, and then one year we were setting up there, and you know, it was just, I used to set up the stage and the sound system and stuff like that. And we're just about to plug in our power and start up, and then the guy from the lighthouse, he comes along and he says, "What are you doing here?" Mm-hmm. Yeah. He says, "We're having a festival here," you know, and basically what was going on is he's saying, "No, you can't have a festival here because I'm in charge of this here." And he said, "Oh, but we got permission from such and such." He said, No, I'm in charge." So he was going to cancel the whole festival, you know, and the devotees were trying to reason with him and stuff like that. And then so what happened is we called up Indradum Maharaj, and he came and he spoke to the lighthouse keeper. And he was speaking to him very, like he was emoting with him. He went with him up in the lighthouse and he was saying, "Oh, you know, it must be a very, very lonely lifestyle here in the lighthouse. You have no friends, you have this and that," you know. And because he was emoting with the person, you know, seeing life from his perspective, not that we have to become like them, but we see from their perspective how things are from their perspective. Because in reality, who are we interested in, really? Reality? The material reality. Let's talk about material reality. Who are we really in? Of course, Mahatmaji, he's on a different reality. He's only interested in Krishna. But exactly. Not interested in anyone else. Couldn't care less about anyone else in this world. Huh? We're interested in only ourselves. So if someone comes and starts to try to sell you something, you know, I was just in a shopping centre the other day, and there was these two ladies there. They were Save the Children Fund or something like that, and they started to say, "Oh, why don't you come over here and we'll tell you what we're doing?" And I felt like saying to them, "Do you really think anyone's interested in what you're doing?" But they wouldn't really pick up on it anyhow. And the thing is, like, if they had have approached it in a different way, because I noticed no one was coming to their table. But if they had approached it in a different way and taken it rather from the perspective of the person they were trying to attract, you know, like how this can help you, how this would be interesting to you, you know, then they may have had more success. So the same way in our preaching activities, if we can emote with the people and try to present things to them in such a way that touches their hearts. Because, see, the thing is, it's most dear to everyone's heart is themselves. There's nothing more dear to a person than themselves. And as soon as you start to emote with them in that way, you'll start to affect them. You'll start to get on their wavelength. Mm-hmm. And this way, they'll listen. So they're feeling, on the material level at least, that you're touching their hearts. Of course, we understand differently. The real way to touch a person's heart is through transcendental knowledge. Yet, if you cannot even get them to open up to speaking to you, to interacting with you, there's no scope for that. So first you need to, just like Indradum Maharaj, he was talking about this man in the lighthouse, you know, and he was talking to him about his life in the lighthouse, not about our festival. Because you can be guaranteed that if Maharaj tried to talk to him about how important the festival was to the people of the town, he would have said, "Forget it." Which is what he was saying to us, because he had the three-phase power. He wasn't going to let us plug into the socket. And without the power, hard to have a festival, especially when you have reggae bands and bhajan bands and sound systems and stuff. So because he wasn't interested, because we were just talking about all the good we were going to do for the people of the town. No interest whatsoever. Yet as soon as Maharaj didn't even bother talking about the festival, to tell the truth. He didn't mention the festival at all. He just talked about the man. He just talked about him. Because that's what he was interested in. And in no time, in a space of about 10 or 15 minutes, He was so enthusiastic about the festival. He was so he just wanted to, you know, give us everything we needed. He gave us the power. He even connected the power for us, you know, which was great for me because I didn't like connecting the power because it's like, you know, you just get your wires empty. This is in Poland. You know, in Australia, they'd lock you up in jail if you did something like this. You just get the wires, bare wires like that, undo the bolts and wire it up. And sometimes you had to pull the fuses out to do it. You know? So you've got like this 63 amp, three-phase power, 440 volts up there, 63 amps, all these things live, 3 inches away from where you're doing up the wires. That used to scare me like anything. I was just so terrified every time I did that. I thought, if I slip with a screwdriver, with the pliers, and they just go like that, I'm dead. You know? And so when he hooked it up, I was very pleased about that. So, you know, by Maharaj's preaching approach, he was able to touch that person's heart. And that was just one example. I've seen, you know, not only him, I've seen many experienced preachers, by the way they interact with people, that open them up to the opportunity of experiencing Krishna consciousness. So this is the expertise of a preacher. And we see here that Krishna, he's using the same expertise. So if we see how Krishna approaches people, how you know, when he's trying to win them over to his way, this kind of expertise is what we need to develop in order to have this effect on people. Because, you know, I mean, gopis are completely different. They're not interested in themselves. They're only interested in Krishna. Yet we are in the material world. We need to see how to deal with people in this material world. So Krishna is giving the example of the gopis become completely enamored by him, by his smiles, his words, his glances, you know, etc. like this. So when we approach people, if we smile at them, you know, how many people do you see smiling out in the street except for the drunks? Huh? You know, they're all sort of so... I mean, I was just in Sydney for a couple of weeks, you know, and a couple of times I was down. I went into the city and you know, have meetings with devotees and stuff, and the people are just like frowning the whole time. You know, I think, you know, what are you doing here if you don't like it? It's such a horrible existence. You know, they just, you know, when you travel on the trains in the peak hour, a couple of times I was traveling in the peak hour, they're just so, you know, absorbed in their life and they're frowning the whole time. You very rarely see someone smiling. Mm-hmm. And a smile is such a pleasing thing. You know, when people see you smiling, you know, Krishna's prahasitam, sweet smiling face, that has its effect. And if someone talks to them nicely, I mean, how often do people experience someone talking to them nicely? So, you know, it just makes the devotees more attractive. You know, don't be caught up in what you're doing. You know, because when we get caught up in our own lives, then they're not very interesting. They're not very, you know, and just like, you know, today is a typical Melbourne day. It's wet, it's cold, it's miserable. Yeah. But don't get caught up in it. It's just a material nature. And what does Krishna say in the Gita? What's that verse in the second chapter? Matra spasas tu kuntaya sitoshna sukha dukha daha agama pino nityas tang satikshaspa bharata. He says, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress are just like the appearance and disappearance of summer and winter seasons. And you see, it's winter right now. Not very long, it'll be summer again. And they'll be complaining, oh God, it's so hot. You know? And then not long after it'll be winter, oh, it's so cold, I hate the cold. Yeah? And then not so long again, oh, it's summer again, oh God, I'm going to melt. You know? So it just goes from one thing to the other, one thing to the other. What does he say? He says, matra spasas. It's just sensory perception. It's all it is. There's misery in the material world. I mean, the material world is just dukkalayam shashvatam. It's by nature temporary. Anything which is temporary is by nature full of misery. Because why? You have it for some time, then it's gone. That's the nature of what's in this material world. Everything is like that. Get used to it. Yeah? You can't hang on to anything. Even your precious body, which we're all so attached to, how long does it last? Yeah? And like, you know, when you're young, you know, some of you are still young. I can tell you, my body is the young part's finished now. It's getting sort of aches and pains constantly. Even that youth, that vitality, how long can you hang on to it? 20 years? Some people 30 years, some people 40 years, maximum. Everyone gets old, guaranteed. Four things you're guaranteed of in this world. What are they? Birth, death, old age, disease. What an optimistic future, huh? Huh? That's what's guaranteed of in this world. And they all bring suffering. I mean, look at birth, for instance. Has anyone ever seen anyone born? One, two, three. I see. You would have seen some, Prabhu. You've seen many. Is that a nice experience? Especially for the person who's being born, is that a nice experience?
No.
That's a horrific experience. You know, you figure it's like, you know, when they come out their head, there's three plates in the head, you know? And there's all these soft spots. And their head is squashed like that as they come out. The brain is squashed. Can you imagine that? There used to be this show on TV when I was a kid, The Addams Family. And there's this crazy guy in The Addams Family. Every time he had a headache, he put his head in a vice and cranked the vice up until his head popped. But could you imagine that, actually getting your head, putting in a vice and, you know, putting the pressure on? Would that be comfortable? Huh? And you're trapped in this bag for, you know, by Vedic definition, 10 months. By Western calculation, 9 months. You're trapped in this bag of placenta. And like all these like gooey substances, not very nice looking things. And you know, the jiva, as the body develops, then it's starting to get the nutrition coming through the umbilical cord. And naturally, when the nutrition enters into the stomach, what happens? Dr. G? Yeah, it's got to come out somewhere. It's not like it's pure essence and just gets absorbed by the body. It comes out. So what happens is you're floating in this this sack, and you're passing urine and stool into the same sack that you're floating in. Yeah? And in the third canto, it describes how there's also worms in this sack that bite. Tiny, tiny worms that bite the jiva. So it's described, it actually describes it very nicely in the Bhagavatam, how much of a suffering condition it is. Yet, very interesting in this world, because, as is explained in the Gita, maya prahita jnana, our knowledge has been stolen by illusion. We're completely bewildered into thinking that this material world is such a wonderful place. And we, you know, we see that there's all these wonderful books are written about how nice childbirth is. How pleasant it is. Why don't you ask the child to write the book? Huh? Let them tell you how unpleasant it is, you know? You know, like people, they have all these, like, you know, romantic notions. You know? Which is basically all it is just some romantic notion of how wonderful it is, you know? I mean, basically, if you asked any child, if you could ask a child, you know, what do you think about that? And they say, I'm never doing that again. You know? And even I've had the experience, sometimes, you know, because maya is very, very powerful, and she can cover our remembrance over very quickly. But generally speaking, when you ask women, you know, after they've just given birth to a child, you know, if they do it again, usually if it's done, if you ask them quite quickly, a lot of them will say no, because of the uncomfortable nature of the experience. Later on, you know, when they've got the holding the child in their arms and they're so beautiful, and then the material nature acts to cover over again. And it's actually described in the Bhagavatam, it says, How the genitals, they have a coating around them, a coating of material energy, you know, which makes the whole thing seem so pleasurable. Yeah? But when you actually, you know, perceive the childbirth, when you see how difficult it is, and it's not a very pleasurable experience. Yeah? But that's the way, it's good to, Lord Shiva, he talks about how we should reflect on these things to understand the nature of the material world, because the more we understand the nature of the material world, the more we will become, you know, sort of a bit more reflective at least, you know, and try to overcome our attraction for these things. Because we are attracted to material nature, that's why we're here. That's what's drawn us here. It's because we're trying to be the controller and the enjoyer. So, even okay, so we look at birth, then death. Is death an attractive thing? And we've all died, but we can't remember it. Has anyone seen death? Yeah, many of us have seen people dying. Is it a pleasant experience? Especially not for the person who's dying. You know? Maybe for the person who killed them it's a pleasurable experience, but for the person who's dying, it's not at all a pleasurable experience. Then we have old age. Is old age pleasurable? Even though Mahatmaji is a very happy person, he'll tell you it's not very pleasurable. Because the body stops working so well. You have all these problems with knees and backs and memory and etc., etc. So this is the nature. All these things we experience here in this material world are not pleasurable. So we need to develop our awareness of the situation in this material world and help others to develop this awareness. But if we just go out to people and we tell them, oh, you know, you're all hogs, dogs, camels and asses, you're suffering because you're sinful. Or you tell them, you know, the material body is just a bag of ignorance. I mean, it says it in the Shastra, we're not denying that. There's all these things described in the Shastra, but, you know, you have to be a little bit realistic about it. People in this world think they're enjoying. They're convinced of it. 100% convinced that I am enjoying. Why? Because they think they're convinced, 100% convinced that I am this body and this is my vehicle for enjoyment, and don't you try and tell me anything different. And as soon as you try to tell them something different, oh, go away. Isn't it? Don't you experience that on the street? As soon as you try to tell them something different, they're just not interested. So the way to approach people is to touch their hearts in whatever way you can, by you know, a favorable approach. Don't talk about you, don't talk about your book. Get them to like you. And the best way to do that is by talking about them. Oh, how are you? You know, like you used this line, are you from Melbourne? Straight away you're asking about them, because that's the best topic in the world as far as they're concerned. There's nothing better that they'd like to talk, there's nothing more they'd like to talk about than them. So it's a wonderful pastimes here, and we see, you know, the way that Krishna's interacting with the gopis is very, very sweet. He's in all his exchanges with them, he's just attracting their hearts more and more and more and more. So as devotees, we try to attract the hearts of the conditioned living entities more and more and more and more. And at some point, they'll become receptive to Krishna consciousness. There's an example Prabhupada used. He says it's just like that every day you get $1. And it's not much, it's just a dollar. But he says, then it adds up every day, you get more and more and more, and then one day you have $100 and you can start a business. So in the same way, maybe, you know, the first time you meet a person, you're not going to convince them to give up their lives and become Nityasiddha devotees of the Lord. It's quite unlikely. It's not impossible, but it's quite unlikely. Yet, if every time we interact with people, we interact in a favourable way, that they're left with a favourable impression, that they think nicely about a servant of Krishna, then this is a very positive thing. And it's giving them, because in this world, Rupa Goswami explains in the Nectar of Devotion, the effect of sinful activities is when one performs sinful activities, they get a reaction, right? And then they also get, there's a dormant seed remains in the heart, and also their sinful proclivity increases. Every time they do something sinful, they become more and more favorably disposed towards sinful activities. The opposite is also there, that when they do something, you know, pious or some agyata sukriti, when they perform some unknown piety towards a devotee or towards the Krishna conscious movement or something like that, then their proclivity towards performing spiritual activities also increases. So by the way we interact with people, this is why Prabhupada would say that devotees should always be perfect ladies and gentlemen. Don't get puffed up and think that, you know, we've got something better than them, therefore we can treat them like dirt in the street. What is the mood we're trying to develop? Trinada pisanichena tororiva sahishnuna amanina mananina kitanya sadahari. That doesn't just apply that we only feel like that towards sannyasis and gurus and senior devotees. You know, and anyone else we can treat like dirt. That means every single living entity. The trinada piece, like you know, the straw in the street. You become low on the straw in the street in the country. You know, you see that a lot in Calcutta and places, big cities in India, the straw on the street. And what happens to the straw? You know, the carts run over it, the cars run over it, the animals, people would walk on it, and it doesn't respond. Toro iva sahishnu, tolerant like the tree. Amanina manarina. Not expecting any respect for myself, yet I'm ready to offer all respect to others. And that doesn't mean just the senior devotees. It means every devotee. It means every single living entity. Even the non-devotees. So we see in this example, I was talking about Indra Dhumaraj, how he was talking with his lighthouse keeper. He was offering respect to him. He was talking about his life and saying, oh, you know, how a lonely life it is, you know, you must, you know. And he was just like, you know, respecting him, giving him some value for his life, you know, validating his life. Yet if we don't do that to people, you know, it has several effects. One thing is like they dismiss us because we're not interested in them, we're not sincerely interested in them. And we don't make advancement. Because what does Lord Chaitanya say? He says, Kitaniya Sadahari. If we have this mentality, then we can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So by developing this humility, yeah, by respecting others, by thinking that I'm insignificant, I'm just a straw in the street, by being very tolerant no matter what happens, just like the weather, you know? Mm-hmm. Being very tolerant, because you can't do anything about it anyhow, you can't change it. Yeah? So you may as well just tolerate it, because there's nothing you can do about it. You know, why get angry, why get upset? You can't. Just tolerate. Yeah? And these attitudes will help us become more and more advanced in Krishna consciousness until we eventually get to the point of Kirtaniya Sadahari, constantly chanting the names of Krishna. And this is the goal, to be always absorbed in Krishna Katha. Right? This is the goal. And because Krishna Katha is non-different from Krishna, so if we're always absorbed in vibrating Krishna's name, we're always absorbed in hearing and speaking the pastimes of Krishna. Vasudeva Katha Ruchi Shanma, there's sweet topics of Krishna. They're so enlivening, and actually the living entity becomes so enlivened by this. So Lord Chaitanya, he's giving us the guidelines that by, you know, respecting others, by being humble, etc., etc., not expecting respect for ourselves, then we can actually make this tangible advancement in devotional service until we get to this point of constantly chanting. So when we're interacting with others, you know, always set this, you know, whether it's other devotees, whether it's non-devotees, whether it's other living entities. Just like I had an experience the other day. I was in the pot shed. And every day the pigeons and the sparrows, they come, mm-hmm. and they eat all the grains and stuff that fall on the ground, the cooked grains. And they also get in the pots and they eat away in the pots. And you know what pigeons are like? As they're eating, what are they doing? Defecating, they're passing stool constantly, yeah? So I got the hose, I get the hose and I sort of hose away because I don't want to be aggressive to them. And then there was one pigeon there, he wasn't going anywhere, so I put the hose on and squirted him like that. And then I was washing the pots later on the night and I noticed he was sitting on the window ledge, dripping wet and cold. And I felt quite bad about that. I thought, this living entity, you know, like in my endeavour to, you know, keep them out of the pot so the pots don't get, you know, contaminated by their stool, I've harassed this poor living entity. You know? So even something like a pigeon, you know, so we need to look at ways of chasing them away without, you know, causing harm to them. You know? Because a devotee should never cause harm to any living entity. You know, we should respect and appreciate all living entities. And when we develop this kind of humility, because in every body there is a jiva. And what is the nature of the jiva? Exactly. It's a servant of Krishna. And if we see that every single living entity is a servant of Krishna, the same as I am a servant of Krishna, then what does this do for our consciousness? How should we be interacting with these other living entities? We should see them. They're servants of Krishna. So it doesn't, you know, we should not treat them badly. So there's just a few thoughts I had on this verse. If we interact nicely with people, you know, and that means, you know, all the devotees, husbands and wives are also devotees, so we interact nicely with our husbands and wives. We interact nicely with all the people we meet, you know, the people we meet on the streets, when we go to the shop, you know, even other people who may be nasty to us, we should interact nicely with them to give them a positive experience. And by that positive experience, eventually, you know, they become more and more favorably disposed towards devotees, where they start to think devotees are nice people. Why are they so nice? And they might actually start to inquire. And in this situation, when they start to inquire, then, what does it say? Atul was quoting that verse yesterday. The inquisitive is one of the pious people that actually approaches Krishna. So if one has this inquisitive nature, they actually have the opportunity to approach Krishna. So it's good to, you know, try to develop this sort of, basically it's an attitude of always acting, you know, in a way that is representing Srila Prabhupada, is representing your spiritual master, is representing Krishna. Yeah. We're not agents of Yamaraj out there to, you know, chastise people and send them to hell or anything. No, we're representatives of Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, keep that in mind, and whenever we deal with any living entity, with any person, you know, or any animal or whatever, always act in a way that would be pleasing to Prabhupada. And in this way, we'll make rapid advancement, because that means we're becoming humble, we're becoming tolerant. We'll make rapid advancement on the path of devotional service. Okay, thanks very much. Any questions at all?